There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
You know, I've got severe weather to talk about here in just a second, possible for our weekend. I have, of course, what's going on in Washington, as we've heard from both President Trump and Speaker Pelosi today at pressers back and forth on the articles of impeachment. We also have a discussion now of what Dalton had mentioned this morning, what may have brought down that Boeing over the skies of Iran the other night. That's in the mix, plus a ton of state news, good news health-wise for Governor Kay Ivey. Also, a bill to ban transgender athletes competing in high school sports here in the state. Got that on the way. Also have interviews talking about fossil finds in Alabama and oystering in Alabama. I got all that stuff on the way. And big news for Airbus here. But then there's this. And it's a tough thing that I have all the things, and you know the amount of time I spend lining everything up for the show. And then right there at the last minute, CNN News Source story pops up on our news partner's WKRG's website. Here you go. The headline. You ready? Survey. Millennials... That's you, Dalton. Millennials spend $300 a month on alcohol. Okay. Survey. Millennials spend $300 a month on alcohol. Now, as you hear the laments of millennials, and I was on the side of millennials when we talk about how high housing prices are out there for millennials trying to get a home. I mean, this is, you go back and you look at houses for sale now, and if you're a young person, young couple trying to get a house, you know, they go to buy this home. You know, they go, well, this home is $250,000. And then they talk to the couple in their early 50s across the street and like, oh, yeah, well, we bought in here. We bought for $53,000 for that same house, right? And the wages have not gone up the same amount. Listen, there's a real thing to be discussed there. You know, you see somebody down at Gulf Shores, and a person like works a regular job, making middle class wages, and they got this great house down there. And then somebody else next door is, you know, paying a million something. They say, "Oh yeah, we spent $110,000 on that years ago." So I was on the side of millennials and their issues for getting homeowners, getting to be homeowners because of the cost out there. And then I see this. Here's the story. People who gave up alcohol this month may save more than their health. Giving up drinking in January has become quite a thing. According to the USA Today, you know, with all the brightly colored pictures on the paper, okay, and the graphs and the bar charts and all that, I guess bar charts is right. According to USA Today, just over half of millennials in a survey conducted by Harris Poll say they intend to take on what's called Dry January. Some say they go out less, and when they do, they don't drink, which leads to a healthier diet and more consistent bedtimes. Okay. 81% of millennials in the survey say taking a break made them realize just how much money they were spending on booze. According to the survey, millennials tend to spend on average $300 a month on alcohol. This has got to be something. $300, Gen Xers, that's me. And Jenny, we spend $150, it says, according to half as much. It's because we're buying we're going to get a bid to the big box store. We're going to Costco. We're buying the giant crates of whatever's on sale, except for the Kirkland beer, which is the worst beer I've ever had. So this is just part of it. The bigger story is like, yeah, Gen Xers going dry in January. Yeah. But the side thing here is, according to their survey, millennials tend to spend on average $300 a month on alcohol. So I used to be, you have a soft spot in my heart, because you look at the numbers and go, this is really a rotten deal millennials have trying to get into homes for what they cost versus what salaries are out there. But y'all are about halfway there on a house note, right? In your booth, a three. Dalton, is that believable? Can you help me here? Can you help me? Because as a representative for all millennials, don't you love this when people say, well, one person, that represents all millennials. Or, oh, hey, there's a white guy. Hey, Sullivan, you can speak for white guys out there. So I'm going to do the same thing. So for millennials, do you spend $300 a month?
Do I? Yes. I don't. No. It's believable. I mean, so many millennials.
I guess that's going to bars? What is?
Yeah, I think you got so many millennials in these big cities.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at you, New York City, mm-hmm. with these, you know, the hoity-toity bars. I think $300 is probably maybe 30 mixed drinks or less in a town like New York City or L.A.
Okay.
For me, $300 would be 12 cases of beer and 2 bottles of whiskey.
Right.
So low. The $300 would actually be low for me in a
saving
month.
Money.
But yeah, I think a lot of this is because so many millennials have moved into big cities.
Okay.
And they're going out to be with friends.
So this is purchasing not at a regular retail level, mm-hmm. but like a restaurant bar level.
That's got to be what it is, because unless they're going out and buying bottles of Johnny Walker Blue Label,
right.
or something like that. I mean, that's a lot of money a month to spend on alcohol. I think even, you know, in my college days,
right.
I mean, I couldn't have been spending more than $80 a month, $100
no.
a month on alcohol.
No, we figured out wherever the sale was and bought. You know, that's why we enjoyed Milwaukee's Best Light and Meisterbrau. Okay,
Busch Light, they got those camo cans.
Yeah. You get a lot of those cans for $300. I don't know. That just, I had all these other stories,
mm-hmm.
and that one just kind of left me leaning.
It is ridiculous, though, to complain about the prices of other things when you're going out and spending $300 a month on alcohol.
We'll have a course for you millennials on how to shop, how to shop for beer. I don't know much about hard liquor or anything, but beer and wine, I can tell you how to shop.
Mm-hmm.
Get more for your buck and save some dollars.
And you didn't like Kirkland Light?
It's the worst beer. And I'm a guy that will drink just about any beer. Uh-huh. I mean, just about any one of them. I prefer some over others. I love craft beer. I love everything from the most basic watered-down beer to the fanciest craft beer.
Mm-hmm.
Kirkland Light is the worst beer I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, and craft beer, that might have a lot to do with this also. Some of these people are getting out there and getting 6-packs for like $30.
Yeah, that may be it too. So there you go. Okay, maybe you explained it more. So there it is. There's the take. Thank you, Dalton. Dalton doesn't do it. But he's not representing all millennials out there. By the way, two good news here for Airbus. And, of course, it's interesting that the, you know, what was bad for Boeing that has led to, well, they at least in part of the description of why Frontier Airlines is leaving Mobile, because they see opportunity where, like, Southwest Airlines pulling out because they flew a lot of Boeings. The good news, the flip side of this, is more business for Airbus and, of course, good news for us. I've got a note here from Senator Richard Shelby's office today with the good news. Here it is. It says, U.S. Senator Richard Shelby today applauded the announcement that Airbus will again increase production rates in Mobile, resulting in 275 new jobs. The company will begin hiring the additional workers this year in order to reach a production rate of 7 A320 family aircraft per month by the beginning of 2021. This growth is in addition to the 600 new jobs the company added in 2019 for increased A320 family and new A220 family production. So it's obviously a big deal, good news, increased production for Airbus, and more jobs for us right here at home. I do not know if there's any way that Senator Shelby has his name on those Airbus jets. I don't think he's worked that out yet, but it may be coming. Hey, when we come back, we're going to Vegas. Yeah, Vegas, baby. The Consumer Electronics Show is going on in Vegas, and we'll be talking about all the cool new products, things that have been debuted out there. And we'll get some firsthand account of what we can be expecting to see in stores in the future. Jeremy Kaplan with Digital Trends joins us live from Vegas next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. On this Thursday, we'll check in with staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams in just a little bit. Severe weather looks like more tomorrow evening into Saturday. Today, all right, but the clouds have been moving in. All right, I mentioned we'd go live to Las Vegas, and let's do it right now, as we're joined by Jeremy Kaplan with Digital Trends, who has got the best assignment ever, digitaltrends.com. You and the crew are out at the Consumer Electronics Show. Jeremy, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on with us.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on the show.
What kind of pleasure is it to be at CES? I mean, for somebody like you, and I've kind of looked at your history here in tech, and you've been doing this for a while. Is this like Christmas Day?
Oh, my gosh. It's exactly like that. We call it the Super Bowl for us. There's 180,000 people here. There's 4,300 companies, and everyone is bringing something new and something crazy and something cool. So for me, it is just like the greatest possible day.
Yeah, and we're getting this information filtered, of course, by folks like you that are there. And I know earlier in the week I heard about a device that was kind of, I don't know, like a Keurig for mixing drinks. You put a packet in there. And then I heard a couple other tech items that seem to be kitchen-based. But does this have a theme? Is there more of something for household? Because I'm looking at your reporting, and you've got prosthetic arms and armor suits and folding computers. And
well, that's exactly it, my friend. That's the challenge here, is that there is so much stuff going on. The technology world is so all-encompassing, and technology touches so many different aspects of our lives these days that it's really hard to pin it down, right? So at this show, which was traditionally a consumer electronics show, meaning, you know, sound bars and speakers and televisions and whatnot, consumer electronics, instead today we see cars here, we see boats here, we see prosthetic arms, as you mentioned. All sorts of different aspects of our lives are really being impacted by technology. So distilling it down and figuring out what the coolest things are, what the most important things are, that's a real challenge. So it's really tough for us, even walking around the show floor, talking to all these companies, trying to figure out what the most important stuff is.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Jeremy, to hear you talk about important versus cool, or I don't know, maybe you're not saying versus, but, you know, there. I can imagine you
no,
walk
I am.
By.
That's exactly yeah. it. That's exactly it. So the thing that we picked is the most important product at this show is not a television. It's not a speaker system. It's from a small company you've never heard of called BrainCo that makes a prosthetic limb. And we know a lot of Americans, a lot of people around the world suffer from the loss of limbs. How do you deal with that? So this isn't just a prosthetic limb. It's a brain-controlled prosthetic limb. In other words, it interprets the signals coming out of your brain and directly translate those into the actions of this prosthetic arm. We've seen brain-machine interface before. It's been a lot of insignificant stuff, especially around the world of gaming.
Mm-hmm.
But to see it in something so important as a prosthetic limb like this, wow, that really just is transformative. And I, honest to God, I shook hands with a man using a brain-controlled prosthetic limb. It was just, it blew me away. Honest to God, it blew me away.
This picture, y'all will see at digitaltrends.com. I'm talking to Jeremy Kaplan from Digital Trends about this. I'm looking at that picture, and I want people to see that on your website, because this is some Star Wars stuff to most
exactly.
people. I mean, this is like what, you know, this is not just, like you said, a prosthetic limb. This is... I don't know how to describe. This is beyond next level. That's cliched.
No, you're exactly right. I mean, the companies, I saw them talking to some executives from a lot, I can't even mention the names because, you know, confidentiality, but I saw them talking to some executives from some very important car companies about other ways that they can use brain-machine interfaces. It sounds so futuristic, right? But it's honestly right there today in front of us. And that's what's so neat about a show like CES, where the future is just right here in our faces.
Because at the same time, so you're walking down the aisles, I guess it's gigantic in the footprint of CES, but you see this amazing prosthetic arm, and then there's a super fast beer chiller on some other aisle, right?
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the show is dominated by, honestly, little silly things. There's a whole bunch of companies that sell cellular phone cases. Like, not really important, but also an important part about the whole ecosystem of technology. There's a lot of television technology. I was downplaying it before, but honestly, the advances in television technology continue to blow me away. So we saw a roll-up television, not a flat panel, but like it just rolls right up into a little ball, and it, which is just astonishing that somebody can do something like that. That came from a company, that came from LG, but then there's a lot of advances in the backlighting technology, which powers the televisions that we're seeing today. So with a things like mini LED, which is coming from a company called TCL, you see really, really deep and rich blacks and really vibrant colors. And it's just a little small technology improvement that makes a really meaningful difference when you're watching your favorite shows. So lots of great stuff here at CES.
Yeah, looking through your eyes and the savvy you have doing this for a long time, because I wonder, you know, you look at something and do you walk down the aisle and see something and say, oh, that's neat, but that won't even be an afterthought next year? Or do you go, oh, they rolled up that TV. That's going to be the future of TV screens.
Well, that's the challenge. I mean, I'm such a technology fanboy, I get sucked into everything I see, so I find it particularly hard to distill what's important and what's not important. But there are some big trends that it's hard to miss. So, for example, over the years, we've been seeing car companies coming to CES. And again, this was the consumer electronics show.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just CES, a technology show. So you see car companies, you know, Ford, Mercedes, et cetera, coming here, and that's an easy trend to pick up. But then behind the scenes, here's a really interesting thing we're seeing. There are a lot of startups in the car world, which sounds crazy, right?
Yeah.
Shouldn't it take 50, 100 years to become a car company? Shouldn't it take the sales of billions of cars to convince the public that this is a company you can trust? Well, no, not anymore. Just like there are startups making new products, there are startups making new cars. So a company called Byton, a company called Faraday Future, a little company you may have heard of called Tesla. There's a lot of startups that are making vehicles these days, and it's fascinating to see this happening. And all of those vehicles, yeah, they're talking self-driving, but the big focus is on electric. So there's going to be a real transformation over the next 5 years as a lot of companies really look at electric and say, how can we change the whole world by using electric vehicles rather than gas-powered cars?
Well, okay, you answered my question then, because I was wondering, what puts these startup car manufacturers there about the electric system and powering, or is it bells and whistles inside the car?
Well, what's funny is the merging of a lot of different things. I mean, you've seen prototypes at car shows. Everyone has. They dazzle us with the bells and whistles. Electric felt sort of like that kind of thing, something to just dazzle and impress people. But if you look at it, of course, we're not using fossil fuels. It's better for the economy. It's better for the environment, blah, 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 blah. So there are reasons to go electric. So all of the electric cars that we see, they're doing it because it's better for the environment, all that. But they also incorporate all of that, those bells and whistles that come from the prototypes we see. So they have these wraparound screens instead of ordinary consoles. Your speedometer is on an LCD screen, and it can also play videos for you, just because why wouldn't it? And all of the weird stuff that happens, the cockpits in the cars that we're seeing are just wildly different than the ordinary ones that you and I drive in our Nissan Sentras and our Toyota Camry.
It's wild, and you make a great point. I mean, here are vehicles being debuted, not at the auto show, but at CES.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
Exactly. We see the auto show is becoming far less important because those car companies want to be associated with CES, with the innovation. That's a big buzzword we keep hearing, with the innovation of a show like CES.
And look at these vehicles. It's unreal. And people are going to have to go through and look at it on the website. You mentioned the word weird. So before we finish up here, Jeremy, because you'll have a list here, the weirdest tech we saw at CES. And I'm waiting for you to get to the toilet paper delivery robot.
You know what the weirdest thing I personally saw was?
What?
There's a robot at the Samsung booth, and it's a picture an ordinary kitchen. You got your cabinets over the stove, and it's a pair of arms that just hangs down from those cabinets. And I saw a chef walk over and say, "Hello, robot." I forget the name of the robot. He said, "Hello, let's start making some food." And the robot helps the man to prepare a salad. It chopped up some tofu. It poured some dressing onto his salad for him. It got something out of a cabinet that was tucked away. Squeezed a little bit of hot sauce on the man's salad. I don't know why you want hot sauce on the salad, but I wasn't going to question the demo. Anyway, robot arms controlled by artificial intelligence that can actually cook food for you. I mean, come on, the future is here right now in Las Vegas.
It's like in-the-house fast food. I mean, it's, you don't have to go anywhere else to have somebody prepare it for you. You just have, the ingredients and the robot. How the heck does the robot know where the ingredients are?
It opened a door into a cabinet and grabbed the right bottle. It's so crazy, right? But that's the reality of where we are today. You hear how excited I'm getting, because I love this stuff. There's just so much cool stuff at this show.
Do you see, are there certain years that you see big jumps more than others? Or, you know, and is this one of those?
Well, yeah, so that's the challenge. Everyone always wants to say, what's the biggest thing you see, what's the coolest trends, et cetera. A lot of the big trends that we're seeing today are protocols being established and some large platforms being set. So one of the hugest trends, of course, is the smart home space. And you've seen doorbells and robot video doorbells and thermostats and whatnot. There's a lot of stuff like that. But what's the big trend here is connecting that stuff in a smart way such that it can all talk to each other. So when you drive in to your home, something senses that you've arrived. All of a sudden the lights turn on, the door unlocks, the speakers start playing some music that you like, you know, the house warms up, whatever. Connecting all the different stuff, that's the real challenge that we're seeing. So there's some movement to make that happen a little easier. So it's not really that exciting to say, well, it's going to get better. But that's one of the big trends that I'm seeing over here.
Great stuff. People want to read more about this. Where do they go, Jeremy?
We've got a whole slew of stuff up on the site. You can't miss it. Just go straight to digitaltrends.com.
Jeremy Kaplan, thank you for your time. Thanks for the insight into CES.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Coming right back, more Midday Mobile. Isn't that cool? I mean, wait till you go to the website and see the stuff that they put up there. Just amazing. Check in with Dr. Bill for the forecast. And coming back, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News joins us. Governor Ivey giving a clean bill of health. That's good news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Yeah, it looks all right for today. Maybe by tomorrow evening, some of the thunderstorms getting in our area. But Saturday, Dr. Bill is not, can't sugarcoat it. Going to be pretty rough weather-wise here. At least Sunday looks not as bad. I don't know if that's good. Not as bad. And then rain back on Monday and Tuesday. Oh, well. All right. So we'll keep our eye on it. Check back with him shortly. And big thank you to Jeremy Kaplan from Digital Trends live at the Consumer Electronics Show out in Vegas. Now, keeping it back home here in Alabama, talk to my friend Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. How are you?
Hey, Sean, how's it going?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And I want to remind folks, as we talk through all these very interesting stories, y'all could get these stories in your inbox every weekday morning and once over the weekend if they got signed up, right?
Yeah, actually, it's a great time to be signed up for Alabama Daily News. And the good news is it's free. It's just aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe at the top. Put your name and your email in. That'll put you on the list. So every morning, and you get it, Sean. I know a lot of your listeners do. Mm-hmm. Each morning, we just lay out the news. It's easy to read, just explanations of what's going on. And so, yeah, with the session coming, legislative session coming, with the election coming right on the heels of that, it's a great time to be subscribed.
And start off, leadoff batter here on the list today. Attorney General Steve Marshall tells lawmakers he opposes medical marijuana legislation. And maybe we can hit the Wayback Machine and take people to last session in Montgomery. And this came up, this question about medical marijuana, right? And then they did a committee to study it. Kind of walk us through that process and how we got to where we are now.
That's right. So the medical marijuana was an issue last session. Senator Tim Melson, he's a doctor up from Florence. And so he had a bill. It passed the Senate. It did not pass the House. And what they decided to do was form a commission to study the issue. And that commission spent all summer and fall basically coming up with a legislation, proposed legislation. Well, that's done. And so everybody kind of thinks that given those steps, that it's kind of likely that this bill would get through the legislature this year. But Steve Marshall, the Attorney General, really threw a wrench into things. He's kept his powder dry on this issue up until now, but he wrote a letter to every member of the legislature saying, in response. He had gotten a lot of inquiries, right, from lawmakers saying, hey, what do you think about this? Is this legal? And he just laid out the case that he considers it, states passing medical marijuana laws is actually in violation of federal law, which bans marijuana as a narcotic. So that's a big deal. I mean, the Attorney General speaking on this issue in a very thorough way is a big deal, and it'll probably affect the trajectory of the bill.
Here's part of it, is I think what he is saying semantically is very accurate. It's one of the reasons I told people that were advocates for marijuana legalization that at that time Attorney Jeff Sessions was their best friend, because he was going to force the hand, where you have states operating in what I see as clear defiance of federal law, and it would have made the legislative branch make a move here to change things. But we're in this kind of, and we have been, Todd, in this kind of in-between world where here are these states, not only medical marijuana, full recreational marijuana, and they pass laws legalizing it, and there's a federal law that says it's illegal. I'm not judging this on the merits of marijuana or not. I'm judging it on the, you got to do something. You cannot have a federal law that's just being beyond openly violated.
Yeah, and you're not talking about like an antiquated, you know, some 50-year-old law. The Controlled Substances Act was updated in 2012, I think. So, I mean, it's a fairly modern law, and you're right. It's being openly violated by these states. And Justice, you know, the Justice Department has decided just not to enforce it. And you're right. I think if Jeff Sessions was still up there, he's a well-known opponent of marijuana. And so, but they haven't. They haven't gone after California or Colorado, some of these states where, you know, recreation is out in the open. And lots of states are getting into the, at least the medical game, Florida, and you know, right there, Georgia, and so it's not a surprise to me that more and more states are going to do this. And Alabama, I still think this bill stands a pretty good chance, but for kind of staying silent for so long, it's interesting to see the Attorney General weigh in here, just to kind of lay out the case, like, hey, know what you're getting into before you pass this bill.
But if he, okay, this is going to be the tough question, right? So if you're Attorney General Steve Marshall, legislature goes in, and for sake of discussion, I'm an advocate for medical marijuana, even though I am an open-eyed enough person to realize in a lot of states that has been the absolute, you know, just first step on the way to recreational, but if you're the Attorney General and you're saying, right now, here's how I see the law, but the state legislature passes a law, right? We changed the law, and now medical marijuana is legal in your state. I don't think I've seen any of these other states where the Attorney General of Colorado, California, Illinois, pick a state, have gone after, once the law's been changed, they haven't, they've just said, well, that's the law. That's the state law, and I'm here to, you know, take care of state law.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I mean, that's their job. The Attorney General has to defend laws, whether they like them or not.
Right.
And that can be a weird political thing for you know, attorneys general. So that's a good question. I do think in this case with medical marijuana, Marshall is among those who see it as a step toward recreation.
Oh, sure, right? Like, sure.
And that's a fair argument.
It's shown, I mean, it's shown to be true. I'm not, and once again, I'm somebody who's an advocate for medical marijuana. But you're not reading the stories if you don't see it as a step towards recreational. It has been in a lot of states.
Yeah, well, and especially when you put in things like fatigue, for you know, you
yes,
can
yes,
get medical marijuana for fatigue or stress. Like, okay, I mean, come on, but you know, but it's interesting to read his letter. And if you're interested in reading the letter, it's on our site in the story. We just put it up there for everybody to see. But it, you know, a lot of advocates for medical marijuana say it's a good alternative to these opioid drugs that have been so addictive and ruined so many lives. But Marshall countered that and said that in many ways it's just like opioids, and that some of the policies that are being adopted are rushing into this kind of like we rushed into opioids. I found that to be really interesting. So what, no matter where you stand on the issue, it's probably a good idea just to read the Attorney General's letter, because he makes some interesting points, and it's clear that he's done his homework on the issue.
Well, but and I wonder, I'm going to try to get him on the show, because back to the first thing we talked about, if it did happen and it was passed, I'm starting to let my mind run. I'm pretty fascinated. Would you have an Attorney General of a state go at, he would have to enforce the law of the state, right? I mean, his adherence is to state law, not to federal. I mean, he's shown that.
I would, and I haven't talked to him about it, so I'd be interested to hear what he's told you, but I mean, I would assume that would be the case. Look, this is going to be a big issue this session, and the Attorney General wading in is a big deal. But really, there are lots of other nuances to this bill that are going to affect its trajectory. You've got the whole thing where part of the bill requires growers to be home-based here in Alabama. And not just growers, but the entire industry, meaning from the farm, you know, to the counter, the licensees and the selling and all that. That's going to affect how people are going to vote on this, because I mean the marijuana lobby, it's a big industry, and you've got a lot of out-of-state folks coming in saying, "Well, look, maybe we're not going to get behind this if we can't somehow, you know, be involved in this industry." So I think you're going to see more than just like for it or against it. It's really comes down to like a business situation, and maybe those won't be headlines necessarily, but that's kind of a behind the scenes look at it.
All right, this is something, one of the many things that will come up in session this it's like 3.5 weeks, 3 weeks or something in Montgomery.
Yeah, February 4th, man. Wow. it's coming. Wow. Right at us.
Okay, before we run to the break, I do want to go to the next story here, and good news here for Governor Kay Ivey.
Absolutely. I mean, I think everybody was just relieved to hear this. She sent out a press release yesterday with a comment from her doctor that he says that she has been cured. He used that quote, cured.
Cured of cancer. Cured of cancer.
Cancer free. And that's terrific. You know, when they announced her diagnosis several months back, they didn't really give a lot of details, but they made sure to say it wasn't deathly serious. And that this follows up on that. It was a stage one lung cancer. She's gone through her radiation. She's gone through her treatment. It appears to be in good health, and that's great news for the whole state.
Yeah, that is good news. That it's because that's been something that people have been thinking about going forward on this. All right, when we come back from the break, Todd, this is a story that nationally I've talked about over time, and now I see one of our hometown reps from down here in my neck of the woods and candidate for AL1 for Congress, Chris Pringle, is filing a bill. It said the gender is real legislation. Oh, it's going for an acronym, right?
The Girl Act. Yeah.
The acronyms. All right. So the Girl Act to deal with what would happen if Todd Stacey decided he was going to compete in Women's Softball League, right?
Okay. Let's not get carried away, Sean. Okay. But yeah, we wrote about that this morning.
All right. Coming right back, we'll talk more about that with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. This is why you've got to be checking in with Todd as well. Like he said, I mean, we're looking at 3 weeks till session, and you can go down the list, which we will, of all the things that are going to be coming up in Montgomery. And that is something you got to pay attention to. I know it's hard to look away from Washington for more than 5 minutes. But there's a whole bunch going on back here at home you need to be aware of. All right, 12:46, we'll be right back. Check in with News 5 next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
1250 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you here. And today, by the way, too, you should do it all the time, but see a police officer, see somebody in law enforcement, tell them you appreciate them. It's National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. That is today, all day long, for law enforcement. And what a story we've had with law enforcement in 2019 and a deadly year for law enforcement in Alabama. Take a second today and tell them you appreciate them. National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day. All right, continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And this is a bigger that you're pointing out in the list this morning, that you put out this morning about Representative Chris Pringle, who's from down here, been on the show a whole bunch, filing a bill. But this is not just a discussion in Alabama. This is a discussion nationwide, and this is about the girl legislation. What is the girl legislation? What is proposed here by Representative Pringle?
It's a proposed state law that would require athletes, high school athletes, to only compete in under their biological gender. It would not. He was careful to clarify, like, if a girl wanted to be the kicker on the football team, I think he's had some of those instances in the past, that's fine. If it's a co-ed sport, right? But if it's girls track or girls basketball, a biological male on their birth certificate cannot compete in that, would not be able to compete in that athletic event. And so this is already a policy from the Alabama High School Association, Athletic Association, but that's not a law. So he's wanting to make it a state law. I think he's filing the bill today. And so we got a heads up on it. It's our scoop today on Alabama Daily News. But it's sure to start some conversation. I've not heard about a ton of this going on in the state of Alabama, but you hear it all the time from other states, you know, California, New York. And so, you know, I guess Pringle, in addition to, I mean, it's kind of good politically for him, but maybe getting ahead of the curve.
Yes, because that case will one day come here, too. And it's, you know, we're talking during the news break, and I've got a kind of a, maybe a different take than some people, maybe the same as others. I think there's a lot of time we spend talking about transgender issues that we, you know, with bathrooms and all, we could talk about other things. I don't, you know, if somebody wants me to refer to them as she and they're a he, I guess I can do that. I mean, it's like, okay. But when you pretend, and that's what this is, let's just talk about facts and science. This is not bigoted. I don't think this is hateful. But when you say that person who anatomically is a male, and let's talk about the fact that males, I know this is shocking to hear, but males by and large, even though there's women stronger, some women stronger than some men, but men by and large are going to be stronger than women. It's just, that's just the truth. Doesn't mean they're better, it just means they're stronger. And you're going to tell me that somehow when somebody just decides that they're now a girl, they should be able to compete with females. The emperor has no clothes, y'all. This is ridiculous.
Well, I think what's interesting in this whole debate is the common sense tends to rule in the end, right? And so it's pretty obvious when you see someone who is, you know, got male characteristics and, like you said, anatomically male, yes, competing in like track competitions with female athletes. It just doesn't look. It just doesn't feel right. And you, what it brings is not just. It's really not even about those male athletes, right? Those transgender athletes. It's really more about the others,
yep,
the other girls. And you sometimes you see pictures and the looks on their competitors' faces. It's like, are you kidding me? You know, how is this fair? And I think Chris Pringle here is smart in his rhetoric to not make it about, hey, we're trying to discriminate or something like that. He's making it about protecting girls. I mean, it's called the Girl Act, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, protecting them from being unfairly, I guess you could say, discriminated against or unfairly subjected to unfair competition. If you want to run track, if you want to play softball, if you want to get into weightlifting, all the different sports that are for, you know, so that's segregated by gender, you know, protect them, let them compete fairly amongst their own biological peers.
You look at, it's not been here in Alabama, but you look around the country. I think Connecticut, there's a bunch of states. I was thinking about a story out of Connecticut where the records, right? You go back and look at now who is holding the records in the track and other sports in women's track and women's this and women's that. They're transgender women. They're males who say they're biologically males. They identify as female now, but they hold the records in all these things. I mean, that is not fair to my daughter, somebody else's daughter, whomever, a woman who wants to be in, a girl who wants to be in a sport. It is not fair, and it will eventually, I imagine, run people out of sports, run females out of sports.
I think that's a fair argument to make. It's interesting also as this debate, like you said, percolates nationally. Sometimes you got to make a decision about stuff like that. I mean, when the groups like ACLU and some of these that really stand up for transgender rights, you know, you can fight all day long for stuff that, yeah, if you fight discrimination, you fight bigotry and all that kind of stuff. But on something like this, you almost would be making a mistake to push it too hard because, again, that common sense eventually wins out and could hurt their cause. You know, how far do we have to go, right? How far must this thing go?
Can you be? How much more woke can you be?
Yeah, and I'll reemphasize, it's so important for those who do oppose this kind of stuff to not make the mistake of jumping to bigoted remarks and trying to discriminate. I'll give a lot of credit to Chris Pringle because he's not going there at all. It's about protecting the integrity of sports and making it fair for girls. And so I think he's smart to stay in that lane and not let it bleed over into uncomfortable talk and everything like that.
Okay, just a minute left here, but I got to finish up with this one because you're reporting today a judge on Tuesday set a final hearing in the lawsuit over control of the Alabama Democratic Party. This has been a soap opera for a year.
Yeah, and look, we put final in the headline, but it feels like a risk because who knows what's going to be final in this case. But Nancy Worley, longtime chair of the Democratic Party, has sued. Asking the court to block the new chairman from basically taking control of the party. Chris England was elected chairman by this upstart group that says that, you know, out with the old and in with the new. So she sued to block that. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. They said, no, we'll handle it at the local level. So now Judge Greg Griffin here in Montgomery will have this hearing and decide maybe once and for all, whether or not who is the chairman of
maybe.
The Democratic Party.
You just said
well,
maybe.
the reason I said it may not end is, I mean, if you don't win in state court, you can always go to federal court. I don't see long term Nancy Worley and the old guard of the Democratic Party being successful like eventually, but they can sure drag it out as long as they want.
There we go. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Once again, what do they need to do to get your email in their inbox?
It's real easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe at the top. Put your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. No cost at all.
Great stuff. Talk to you soon.
All right, Sean, be good.
All right, will do. Todd Stacey, thank you very much. Hey, coming back, Drew Gentry with University of Alabama at Birmingham has found some fossils. Okay, we find fossils in Alabama that belong to a turtle. Okay, all right, you got that part. That was swimming in the seas where Alabama sits now 75 million years ago. You got to hear this stuff. We'll get to it next right here on Midday Mobile.